This is Jordan Sekulow. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, a former top FBI lawyer says that the FISA application to spy on the Trump campaign was approved in a, quote, unusual way. We'll tell you how today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Anyone who says this was just targeted narrowly at Carter Page doesn't understand how a FISA warrant works and why we need a court to monitor it. And that is, once you get access to this, you get access to their historical phone records. You're able to insert people like informants posing as other people, agents who might pretend that they're a Turkish college assistant, as in the case of George Papadopoulos, to extract or trick you into giving up information.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
It's a very powerful tool. And listen, fighting spies, capturing terrorists is hard work. We don't want to take that from the FBI. But in this case, we now know the evidence that was used was highly flawed. It's not a normal counterintelligence investigation.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls now, 1-800-684-3110. This just breaking last night. There was a joint session of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees back in August 31st of 2018. That means both Republicans and Democrats heard this information. Of course, you're not going to hear a lot of it from Democrats. From the former FBI Deputy General Counsel. So this is the number two attorney at the FBI, Tricia Anderson. She was normally responsible for signing off on Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act applications before they reached the desk of her superiors. So it went through her office. She, quote, said it was usually followed a, quote, linear path. But that normal path was upended in October of 2016. What's key there? Of course, that is before the presidential election. In October of 2016, when then FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, both who have been fired, by the Trump administration for good reason, signed off on the application to surveil Carter Page, thus surveilling the Trump campaign, that FISA warrant, before she did. And her job was to start that process. So because her bosses did it, she felt like she couldn't really do her normal review, that it had gone over her head. She stressed that, you know, I'm drawing a distinction because my boss and my boss's boss had already reviewed and approved this application. This one was handled a little bit differently in that sense, in that it received very high-level review and approvals, informal oral approvals, before it ever came to me for signature. And it was her job to start the process as part of the senior executive service before it got to top-level members of the FBI and Department of Justice who ultimately had to sign off on it. Now, who did this before it got to her? Well, we know it was Deputy Director McCabe, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States at the time, Sally Yates. These are an Obama appointee, Jim Comey, and also the FBI General Counsel, so her boss, Jim Baker, had all signed off on it before it went through the normal process. I mean, you're talking about when we say that this investigation started in an unusual way, and by the way, add another viper to the den, because she's coming out and pointing fingers to Tricia Anderson about this unusual FISA process. We've said from the very beginning that the whole beginning of the Russia investigation was a hoax. It was not following normal procedure. It was based off a phony dossier that they knew was absolutely phony, and we've got more information about that today, coming when the State Department was trying to send information about some bank that the Trump campaign was communicating through computer through to Russia. I mean, this is absurd, folks. To spy on an American and thus spy on a presidential campaign, and the FBI threw out the normal rules, the Department of Justice threw out the normal rules to spy on President Trump, and we now know that from the person at the FBI, the attorney at the FBI, whose job it was to actually do the FISA process in the normal way, to go through and make all the checks, you know, to check all the boxes. I want to take your calls on this, 1-800-684-3110. You think the den of vipers is getting a little nervous, 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on air, and should FISA be reformed? Taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
A FISA process was started, so the application was started to get a FISA application to spy and warrants secret on Carter Page, which means if it's an American, you've got to make the claim that they are acting as a foreign agent. So they are losing their rights as an American citizen, basically, to go have normal due process, because the FISA court process is totally secret. You don't get an opposing counsel. So, it's the government's duty to put forward any exculpatory information about the person they are targeting. And of course here, that would have been, this dossier is really pretty tough to rely on, has a lot of allegations in it that we can't even, we can't confirm, and that things are just, as Jim Comey said, salacious and unverified. But yet, as we are now learning from testimony that was given to both the House Judiciary and Oversight Committee in August of 2018, so Democrats knew this as well, not just Republicans. The FBI Deputy General Counsel, so the number two attorney at the FBI, Tricia Anderson, said under oath that she's normally responsible for signing off on FISA applications before they reach the desk of her superiors for final approval. So she signs off on the applications because the directors usually are handling, you know, she said Jim Comey could get a dozen of these a week. So you want somebody like her who's really going through it with a fine-tooth comb, to make sure before it gets to the director's desk and the deputy director's desk that it's something worthy of filing to the court, because this is an official legal court filing by the Department of Justice ultimately. But instead, when it came to trying to get a FISA warrant that would lead to being allowing the FBI to spy on the Trump campaign, she said something, quote, unusual happened. The linear path was not followed, and instead, she was handed the application, and it was already signed off on by the FBI deputy director at the time, Andrew McCabe, the deputy attorney general at the time, Sally Yates, Jim Comey, and Jim Baker. So all of her bosses. So she felt like it had been totally taken out of the normal process. She said it was unusual, and that ultimately that would mean that it would be that it had already gone through a review process. In her mind, she saw these individuals as acting in good faith at the time, and that she would not need to go through her normal process if people that high up, her bosses, nor would she question them if they had already decided to approve this. So you realize here what happened. Those with a political animus towards President Trump, this happening a month before the general election, wanted that warrant to spy. They needed a person to get the warrant so they could get into the campaign. That was Carter Page. So they get the application, and they rush it through a process that isn't the normal process. So again, what do we hear about the Russia investigation's origins? Unusual. Not following the normal course of investigations by the FBI. That became the norm at the Jim Comey FBI, is that you don't follow norms. You don't follow the procedures that have been put in place, the safeguards, especially when it comes to FISA, put in place. We're taking your phone calls on this at 1-800-684-3110. But Than, talk about politicizing spying on Americans. This is it right here. You've got these bad actors, and we know that they are bad actors now, very partisan, some of them who are partisan appointees, who took this out of the normal bureaucratic process for a FISA application and the safeguards, and rushed it over the top of those people's heads to get it into court.
Yeah, Jordan, whenever we talk about this issue, I like to remind people that this is maybe the most sacred power that we grant to law enforcement agencies and entities, the ability to spy on the American people. And Jordan, that's what makes following the proper process so important. This is maybe the most important sector that we have to protect from politicization, because it involves the privacy of Americans. It involves a violation of their fundamental rights if the proper process is not followed. That's what makes this new report so alarming to me. Look, I look at Tricia Anderson's statement that by the time it got to her, that it was really an administrative review in nature because her bosses had already checked off on it. Jordan, I think that's probably fair. Look, I don't think it's okay that she maybe didn't do diligence because her bosses had already signed out. She probably should have stood up to them. But look, we all can recognize this.
I mean, it was like her boss's boss's boss. I mean, it was three levels up from her. You can be put in that situation. And unlike Jim Comey, who says he is weak and can't stand up to people, you can see why someone at that level would say, well, maybe, you know, I shouldn't ask questions here if they're doing it this way. Because at that point, why question these individuals necessarily? She'd been working for him for a number of years.
Well, because if she did raise questions, Jordan, it's quite obvious what would have happened. She would have been overruled because her bosses had already made the opposite decision. But look, we see the same actors doing the same violations that we've seen before. Jim Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Jim Baker, Peter Strzok was involved in this. Look, it all goes back to the insurance plan in Andy's office. It all goes back to we'll stop him. And Jordan, the other reminder I would leave people with is we're talking about Christopher Steele's information here, someone who admitted to the Bureau that he wanted to stop Trump. And Jordan, someone who was terminated as a source because he leaked to the media, an example he probably followed because he saw Jim Comey doing it, and yet they continued to use him. So it's the same breed of vipers, Jordan. I think that's a right term to use for them. It's another example of it. And quite frankly, I'm glad it's finally coming out into the public view.
Yeah, I mean, take a listen. Remember, this is Jim Baker. This is the boss of Tricia Anderson, who is now, this is coming to light, her testimony before joint committees of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees back in August of 2018, when she testified about this unusual FISA process that Andrew McCabe and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates took over and took out of her kind of the normal linear approach, as she said. This is her boss. Remember, she's the Deputy General Counsel at FBI. Here's the General Counsel at the FBI, Jim Baker. He now suddenly is starting to, he's joined that den of vipers. He's suddenly out in the news. He's choosing liberal news places to go. So whether it's MSNBC or this Yahoo skullduggery podcast, he said this about the dossier. Remember, so he knew exactly what he's submitting to court was junk.
The information came in, and there was a lot of detail with respect to a lot of different types of activities that were allegedly going on. And so I guess the way I have phrased it, I think we took it seriously. We didn't necessarily take it literally. That was literally true in every respect. But it was something that we were obligated to deal with and obligated to assess, given what I understood to be the source of the information, Christopher Steele.
Let's say they were obligated to assess it. Okay, fine. They get this information. They should take a look at it about a presidential candidate, Harry. They're not obligated to go try and get a FISA warrant based off of it.
Absolutely not.
Especially if they don't think it's literally true.
The predicate for a FISA warrant is to ensure that the information was indeed verified. Indeed, the individual signatories to the FISA warrant actually certified that the information had indeed been verified. John Solomon, a reporter for The Hill magazine, has filed a motion with the Southeast Legal Foundation with the FISA court, suggesting, among other things, that the attorneys involved knowingly made false statements of fact to the court in violation of ABA rules, knowingly failed to correct the false statement or fact previously made to the court, knowingly offered evidence that the attorneys knew was false. And so I think if you look at the Steele dossier, it has all of the quality and all of the earmarks of a national inquiry or inquirer article. So in other words, it's highly fictional, and on its face, it is doubtful, dubious, and unbelievable.
I mean, the fact that he even uses these words, they get themselves in trouble. Jim Baker would have done a better job as a former general counsel of the FBI staying out of the media while this process was ongoing, because he's under scrutiny right now, as we know now from this U.S. attorney that's been appointed to look into this, the U.S. attorney appointed by Bill Barr, the attorney general. But instead, he's decided to open his mouth because they're all trying to defend themselves. So he comes up with these goofy-sounding statements, very typical from government actors. So you say things like, "We took it seriously, but not literally." Than, I mean, to the American people, when you say something like that, serious but not literally, and yet you still decide to go to the secret court system in our country to claim that someone is a foreign agent, thus they lose their due process rights as Americans, not really to go after that person, who, by the way, faced no charges whatsoever, Carter Page, in any inquiries, nothing in the Mueller report, but so you can get the warrant to spy on the Trump campaign, even though you know it's not literal, a.k.a. it's not truth.
It was a lie. I mean, Jordan, they took this information that they knew was not valid, and they swore to the FISA court that it was accurate, that it was valid, that it was verified. Those signatures testified that the officials that signed off on it believed the evidence they were presenting to be valid and verified. They knew for a fact, that is a fact now, Jordan, that it was not verified. So they lied to the court and violated one of the most sacred powers that could be bestowed on them. It's really breathtaking.
We come back. There's even more shocking information about what the FBI knew, what Jim Comey even knew before he swore, put his name on that FISA application, what all these individuals knew. This is all starting to be uncovered. We're going to start taking your phone calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. A lot of calls coming in. We will start getting right to those when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live. Check out ACLJ.org. A lot of information, a lot of cases we're working on.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls. I'm going to get right to them. But, you know, I wanted to point this out, too. So now we know how unusual. And this is coming from the number two attorney at the FBI when she was testifying before the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees back in August. Now this testimony is coming to light. How unusual the FISA process was to get the FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign using Carter Page as kind of like the patsy to get through to that, because Carter Page faced no legal issues with this whole Mueller investigation. I mean, I don't know him. I don't know that much about him. I think he was, they chose him to get inside to get the access. Because remember, once they got the access, they started doing all the unmasking. Don't forget that part of this either. Right now we're focused on how they even got to point A and how unusual that was. But point B was, okay, now that we got in, let's start unmasking all these people. And this continued not just through the campaign in the final month of the campaign, continued through the transition period as well, which is even more serious to an extent because the president at that point is being prepared as president-elect to become the commander-in-chief with more classified briefings, building his team and his cabinet and putting that together. We take a listen to Bill Barr. He said it too. So he knows what was obviously in this testimony. And now we've heard it from the person themselves, from her. She also has testified too, and you can add another viper to the din. But here's Bill Barr talking about it on Fox News, Bite 11.
This was handled at a very senior level of these departments. It wasn't handled in the ordinary way that investigations or counterintelligence activities are conducted. It was sort of an ad hoc small group, and most of these people are no longer with the FBI or the CIA or the other agencies involved.
No, Brennan, Clapper, McCabe, Sally Yates, Comey, Jim Baker gone. Even this former deputy general counsel, she is gone. I mean, they're all gone. And so, as he said, though, how unusual it was that they were the ones directing, because we know that Brennan and Clapper were involved with this, too, through their email exchanges. And they've also joined that den of vipers by coming out and saying, no, not us with the dossier. Then they came back on Brennan and said, yeah, you told us to include the dossier. We got an email from you saying that. So, again, I think when you put that with what Bill Barr said and the idea that this is not, it's kind of like what the president keeps saying, what we keep hearing too from members of Congress who are saying the right things. It's not the normal FBI agents. It's not the normal DOJ attorneys. It's this handful. It's a hand selected group at the top level, just a handful of people, but the most senior from the intelligence agencies, formerly from the FBI and DOJ, who were making these decisions. They were going around the good people who work for the FBI, the good people who work for the Department of Justice, the real law enforcement officials in our country who safeguard our rights while also investigating crimes, and they have that balance they have to play. They went around those kind of people and said, no, we're going to take this and make it totally political because no one will ever catch us. Well, they're being caught as we speak. Let me go right to the phones. A lot of calls coming in, and we'll keep getting adding more context to this too. 1-800-684-3110. I'm going to start in order because there are so many people who have called in. Amy in Washington State online for Amy. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi,
Amy.
Hi, Jay. Hey, I want to thank you for all your work. I won't tell you how long I followed you because it will age us both. But I just really want to tell you how much my family thanks you for all your hard work. But I know you have a lot of calls, so I'll get right to it. My most frustrating question that I've had for going on 3 years now is, I live in Washington State. I live in a very small town. If I can see through these people and know they're guilty, why is it taking us 3 years? If this was the Republicans, they'd already
Let's remember, Donald Trump faced unprecedented opposition, assuming office, from the deep state. I know people think that's a conspiratorial term, so we can call it something else. The intelligence community and law enforcement community leadership. FBI leadership, DOJ leadership, the number twos, sometimes it's the number ones, FBI, CIA, the CIA, National Intelligence Agencies as well. So they created a very difficult process for him to start. Then Jeff Sessions recused himself. Then the Mueller special counsel team gets put together. And their job was not to investigate the origins of how it got to the Russia investigation. Their job was to see, was there any criminal activity between the campaign and again, this totally phony basis but they didn't get the job. Their job was not to investigate that basis. They should have done that. I think they probably should have when they realized that they had to get rid of Peter Strzok from their team and Lisa Page from their team because of how partisan they were. Remember, Peter Strzok started this counterintelligence investigation before there was even a FISA warrant application put forward to the FISA court. So why did it take this long? We had to then get through the Mueller report. We had to get a new attorney general who knew how to handle Washington, D.C., and get to the truth, and now we're starting the process. So, yes, it's taken this many years, but I think that lays it out for you why. You first had this unprecedented wave of opposition to the president from the swamp and the swamp actors. Now they're joining the den of vipers. Then you had the Mueller investigation. Now you've got a new attorney general who said we're going to get to the bottom of this. And it has taken too long, Than, but ultimately I think that it is just the reality of what this president has had to deal with. It's why sometimes his frustration is very public and it's understandable.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, Jordan, given all the dynamics you just talked about, I actually am pretty heartened by the fact that pretty much all of the main players that we've talked about today, all of the leadership, the seventh floor of the FBI, they're gone, Jordan. I think they've been exposed, and in many cases they ran for the hills. In other cases, like Jim Comey, they had to be fired. But I think that is a good sign. Now what I think is happening, quite honestly, behind the scenes, with Bill Barr and these U.S. attorneys and others, I think we're trying to find out who on the secondary level was involved so that we can make sure that the cleaning house is as thorough as it needs to be. And Jordan, just one thing for context. Remember, one of the text messages that came out between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page several months ago was the fact that they were talking down to the fifth floor. They wanted to talk about the benevolence of the seventh floor. That's the leadership of the FBI, the politicals at the FBI. And the fifth floor was standing in the way of what they were trying to do. That's counterintelligence. Quite frankly, that's people like Tricia Anderson, who they didn't want to review what they were doing. So I think it's just another context, another example of in this situation, it was the leadership in these chambers that were running roughshod over process. And what we're in the process now is digging down to see what layers of these departments went along, were complicit, so that we can root them all out.
I keep calling in. We got a second half hour coming up, 1-800-684-3110. Let me take another call. Jack in Washington State, line 5. I think we can answer this one quickly for you. Jack, you're on the air.
Okay, real quickly, I just wanted to know, has anybody wondered about what the FISA court judge's deal was in all this? Could they be political and allowed that warrant to be issued based upon their beliefs as well?
Harry?
Well, that's always a possibility, but it's my understanding that the FISA court judges were not directly involved in this largely fraudulent investigation. And it's very possible that they have issued memos and directives basically admonishing the FBI. And certainly John Solomon has a motion seeking clarity with respect to the lack of candor by the FBI. And that is pending before the FISA courts as we speak.
I think that investigation, too, by the Connecticut U.S. attorney who's been tasked by Bill Barr to handle this, we'll look into that as well. Do these judges feel duped? Were they used? Were they part of the process in going after President Trump? We should know. We should learn that. And I think the Department of Justice is getting to the bottom of it. We'll be back. Second half hour, Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live,
anyone who says this was just targeted narrowly at Carter Page doesn't understand how a FISA warrant works and why we need a court to monitor it. And that is, once you get access to this, you get access to their historical phone records. You're able to insert people like informants posing as other people. Capturing terrorists is hard work. We don't want to take that from the FBI. But in this case, we now know the evidence that was used was highly flawed. It's not a normal counterintelligence investigation.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Let me set the stage for you. What we've learned was just reported last night. In front of a joint session of the House Judiciary and Oversight Committee, on August 31st, 2018, former FBI Deputy General Counsel, that's the number two attorney at the FBI, Tricia Anderson, said she was normally responsible for signing off on Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act applications, FISA warrant applications, before they reached the desk of her superiors for approval. Anderson said the, quote, linear path those applications typically take was upended in October 2016 when FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates signed off on the applications before she did. Because of that, quote, unusual high-level involvement, she didn't see the need at the time to second-guess the FISA application. For goodness sakes, as she goes on to say, this is my boss and my boss's boss already reviewing and approving the application. So they went around the normal process. We know Jim Comey was part of this. We know Jim Baker, the boss to Tricia Anderson, was involved in this. We know that the CIA director, Brennan, was involved. We know that the National Security Advisor and Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper, was involved. So we also remember that once this application gets approved on Carter Page, it's to spy on the campaign. It's not to go after Carter Page. Notice you don't get a lot of Carter Page anything in the Mueller report. Nothing happened to him other than his name being sullied, unfortunately, because of these bad actors at the FBI and Department of Justice. They used him as the way to get into the Trump campaign and through the dossier. So they get the dossier, they use him, and remember all the unmasking that starts. But there is more to this, and I haven't shared this yet there, so for our second half hour. Before the FBI and Jim Comey swore to the FISA court on October 21st of 2016 that they had verified the FISA warrant application and deemed Christopher Steele, who put together the dossier, a credible informant with no known derogatory information. Think about that. This is at the same time that we have Jim Baker now in the record saying we didn't take it literally. But yet they swore that there was no known derogatory information. Even though Jim Comey also called it salacious and unverified, he still swore that there was no derogatory information. I mean, you see why these people could be in some serious trouble. Here's what the government knew. Jim Comey knew. First, Christopher Steele had told senior justice official Bruce Orr he was, quote, desperate to defeat Trump and was working in some capacity for the Clinton campaign. So he's a partisan actor who wanted to defeat Donald Trump. He leaked Christopher Steele, the dossier, to the news media. Christopher Steele also gave false intelligence. One of those examples, which was investigated by the FBI, was these alpha pings that were supposedly being used at a Russian bank so that a Russian bank computer was used to communicate between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. It was found to be, of course, totally false, totally inaccurate, and Christopher Steele put that information forward. So when Jim Baker says it, we took it seriously but not literally, he's trying to cover himself. Seriously but not honestly. Seriously but not truthfully. The problem is when you swear to the FISA court that there's no known derogatory information, like the person's a partisan actor, like the person has other motives, like the person is being paid by the opponent of the person you're seeking the warrant on, the Clinton campaign, or that person's leaking, or that person's putting false intelligence forward that you know is false. I mean, Jim Comey said salacious and unverified. Yeah, untrue, illegal, and still relied upon. When we come back, we take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. A couple lines have opened up. Want your thoughts on this, 1-800-684-3110. And if you're on Facebook and Periscope, share this with your friends and family. It's in the news, but it's not getting the coverage it deserves. Share now on Facebook and Periscope. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, we got a lot of calls. So I think we've gone through this for you so that you've kind of ready to take all these calls. And usually we take most of the calls in the final segment, but with so many coming in, I think there's a lot to discuss with each of these calls. So we're going to start with people who've been holding on. Lou in Dallas, Texas, we appreciate you holding, Lou. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jordan. Appreciate everything you guys there do. And
thanks, Lou.
I think you're spot on everything you've been talking about, and it's extremely outrageous that an American citizen's Bill of Rights were just shredded in the FISA court.
Yeah, I mean, his were shredded, and then the entire campaign. So everybody who worked for the Trump campaign was shredded, including the President of the United States, because they all got unmasked. But go ahead, Lou.
You're exactly correct, and I have a request, kind of comment request petition, but I think it's clear the FISA court was abused and is broken and needs repaired, and I think there needs to be legislation, you know, Alan Dershowitz, ACLU, FISA court revision legislation. And I'll give credit to this. Alan Dershowitz is no Trump fan and no individual that's a fan of the Republicans. But I think when truth speaks, it's very powerful.
Yeah.
He recognizes this court was totally abused in this situation, too. And I heard him propose a few weeks ago that we cannot let this happen to another president or anybody else in the future. That the FISA court must appoint approximately two or three lawyers to be, so to speak, the devil's advocate. You clearly cannot trust the people that just totally blew this the last time.
They're like, you know, I think what he's proposing is almost like ombudsmans for newspapers who point out when the newspapers are wrong and point out when the newspapers have done something wrong or kind of, you know, there should be private attorneys sworn in so they would have the clearances necessary. Listen, I think, Harry, that the whole process needs to be reviewed. I think that's we need to look at FISA in 2019 and, you know, going into 2020 so that this never happens to another president or American like Carter Page, that their rights get shredded, as Lou said, for the only reason is so that the intelligence community could get into could start spying on a presidential campaign in America.
I think that Lou has a very, very good point. And I think the real issue here is that the leadership of the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA, the Department of National Intelligence, they have all been implicated, arguably, in a conspiracy to thwart democracy. And so I think Alan Dershowitz's idea of essentially appointing a guardian ad litem for the target of a FISA warrant application makes all the sense in the world. We need someone who's capable of testing the quality and the verifiability of the evidence presented to the FISA court. And clearly the FBI leadership, not only did they fail to do their job, in essence, they engaged in a conspiracy to hide and verify false information to the FISA court. And so this warrants a deep investigation by the Department of Justice, and many of these actors, at least in my opinion, need to face justice and the prospect of both a conviction and prison time.
1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Jerry's calling in from Rhode Island on line one. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello, team. Hey. Everything Lou said, Professor Hutchinson said, and Dershowitz, all accurate. Having the DOJ in part investigate part of their own drilling, that's a question, because nobody should be investigating themselves. Fan said something earlier about Miss Peterson. If Fan had come in as a second assistant and worked with all those people above him and came into work after a day off and saw that everybody above him had signed off, what was the protocol to question all your bosses, though you deviated? So let's not be so quick to call Miss Peterson a viper.
Oh, no, I don't call her a viper. All the vipers aren't being used in a negative sense. Some of the vipers are coming out in a way because they're defending themselves. So these are all the different people who are defending themselves from one another, because who knows what they're going to say about her now that this is out. So now that she's put her name out there. So I don't use the viper always in the derogatory sense. But what I do add is another top government official involved in the FISA process, who is now within the den of vipers because she was taking bites at these individuals. She decided when she testified, and now that testimony is public, and those individuals are going to have to respond, Than, on why. So some vipers play a positive role in this process. I think you know, Rod Rosenstein also could play a positive role in this as well. Like when he came out at Jim Comey about questioning his moral fortitude. And working for Trump, certainly that was eaten away. So I don't use it always in a derogatory term, but I do agree that it's not really on her. I think that there was a process in place. They used a process that didn't exist and went around the normal way. And for most bureaucrats in Washington, that, you know, they're not going to start questioning the number their boss, their boss's boss, and then their boss's boss's boss.
Yeah, I actually fully agree with Jerry. What I was trying to communicate is that when this application got to Tricia Anderson's desk, I think the fix was in. I mean, if the signatures of her boss and her boss's boss were already on it, I don't think there is anything that she could have done to change the process. I simply said, you know, I'm not saying a perfunctory review of it was then the right thing to do, but I don't think there was anything that Tricia Anderson could have done, Jordan, to change the process. So I fully agree with Jerry. The other point I was trying to make is that it is the final nail in the coffin that this was a political process, not a process-driven matter, and it is probably the most important instance where process should have been used to protect from politics. So I think I agree across the board with Jerry.
Yeah. If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110, as you can hear. We're taking a lot of phone calls, and we've still got another segment coming up. We're going to take some more phone calls right now. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Nancy in Indiana. Now, this is one, Nancy, I do wonder about a lot, but I want you to ask your question first. I don't want to get too far ahead of it. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hello, Jordan, and fellow truth seekers. My question was sort of addressed by a previous caller. What, when the judge saw this, what was he thinking when he was reading this? And I'm going to go a little bit off track. Wasn't there some text messages between Strzok and Page on finding the correct FISA judge?
Oh, there was text messages about one of the judges who also served. Remember, it's judges in the federal court system who get chosen to be FISA judges as well. And you don't know who's going to hear a specific one, but Peter Strzok had a relationship with one of them. And yes, there was text messages about that judge between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Certainly needs to be looked at by the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, reviewing all this, because this is the origins. Peter Strzok starts the counterintelligence investigation. So there's part one of the origin. The next step is getting the warrant on to be able to spy on the Trump campaign. They had to find a way in. They used Carter Page and the dossier to do that. But you also said, like, could these FISA judges not see through this? It depends, Harry, on what completely was submitted to the FISA judges. From what has been reported and what has come out, there was not a lot of information about this possibly not being true, and
absolutely,
this dossier possibly being, as Jim Comey said, unverified and salacious.
You're absolutely correct. Indeed, there was virtually zero evidence indicating that the dossier had been financed and funded by an opposition political party, which makes the FISA warrant immediately suspect on its face. So I don't think that information was fully provided to the FISA courts, in addition to which, of course, the FBI, the senior leadership of the FBI, verified the accuracy of the reports, even though Steele's dossier was highly fictional and highly made up. So I don't think we should expect FISA judges to undertake an independent investigation. I think they did indeed rely on the FBI and the DOJ. And lastly, to your earlier point, there is a possibility that Peter Strzok perhaps steered at least one of these FISA applications to a friendly judge. That I cannot say at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was reported. I mean, and again, this is stuff that was reported. It's tough because this is FISA, it's all secret. Than we know that supposedly they had a tough time initially getting even a FISA warrant approved. So there were some judges reportedly in the way who said no initially, that they weren't the rubber stamp that they usually are.
Yeah, and there's surely cause for wondering, Jordan, if that's why the dossier got added, to make sure it pushed it over the line. Look, I've got some sympathy for whatever judge heard this, because even though the FBI knew that Steele wasn't credible, they knew that he couldn't be trusted, they knew that he was leaking, they in fact fired him for that, they turned this package over to the FISA court and then swore to that FISA court that it was verified. Jordan, I actually think that ties in the other issue that we were talking about. That's why it probably would be a good idea to have an advocate for the target of surveillance inside the courtroom to ask these kinds of questions. As far as we know, Jordan, the FISA court judge that heard this, all he knew is that the FBI swore it was verified. No one questioned that.
Yeah, I mean, again, all this that we've learned, all this back and forth that was happening, was not necessarily before the judge. I mean, they wouldn't have been privy to that information. And again, the whole process needs to be reviewed. We've got another segment coming up. We take more of your phone calls. That's what we do. We've opened up some lines. We've taken a lot of calls. So if you want to be on the air, this is the time to call. 1-800-684-3110. Have your voice heard on this issue. Call now, 1-800-684-3110. Be on the broadcast.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up, at aclj.org.
Folks, if you want to be on this final segment of the broadcast, we've taken a lot of phone calls. Today, and lines have been pretty full, but we've opened up a couple of lines. So if you want to be on, this is the time to call. You got to call in right now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're now we're talking about this number two attorney at the FBI, formerly there, who is now speaking out about how unusual the FISA application process was for Carter Page. That was the application ultimately that led to the FBI being able to spy on the Trump campaign, all the unmasking, you know that story. So let's get right to the calls, 1-800-684-3110. Bill in California, on line one. Bill, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. My question is, did they actually accomplish anything with their spying? I know they broke rules and violated rights, but in my mind, the real problem was they're undermining Trump's presidency.
No, that's what they accomplished, and that was their goal. I mean, as Jim Comey said, I'm going to leak these memos to get a special counsel, because if there's a special counsel, that's going to help undermine the presidency, because that'll drag on. And we had, unfortunately, an attorney general who recused himself, Jeff Sessions, and put the deputy attorney general in a very difficult situation, having to make these calls. But all of this was to undermine President Trump. No, no one got in trouble for what their whole mission was. You know, even like Paul Manafort, who's got this biggest sentence so far. I mean, it was totally unrelated to the mandate. It was just collaterally found in their investigation, but it had nothing to do with the Trump campaign. It was years before. So this whole effort was the swamp fighting back against a president who, again, they wanted to prevent from getting elected. So this starts in October before the election. The counterintelligence investigation starts long before that, but the FISA application goes in even before the election. Then they want to undermine the president right from the beginning. So during the transition, they go after like the Flynn types and all of that. And then they get their special counsel appointed. So three different stages of the swamp fighting back. Why? Because they didn't like the fact that this president said, I'm going to drain the swamp. I'm going to get rid of these bad actors. And now we're finally getting to the point where we're going to start doing that. But see, they got a 3-year delay on that. Now, it may ultimately lead to their demise, Harry, but get them all in a lot of trouble. But what they accomplished, I think they did accomplish initially what they wanted, which was to undermine the first few years of the president's term. He still got great, you know, Supreme Court just nominees through things like that, but everything has been tougher.
I think that's precisely correct.
And the country's been more divided.
So I think your analysis is spot on. So even though the Mueller report essentially found that there was no collusion, no obstruction of justice, no conspiracy with the Russians, the Democrats continue to use the special counsel's investigation as a tool to demean and to weaken this particular president. Notwithstanding the attempts by the left to weaken his presidency, President Trump has accomplished a huge amount on the policy front. But it is still being used as a weapon, and so I think you are precisely right. This was initiated and arguably led by senior leadership at the former Obama administration officials in the DOJ, FBI, CIA, and national intelligence.
Let's go to Scott in Colorado. Let's get Scott a book or two. Scott, I appreciate you holding on. I wanted to give you time to be able to talk because I think you're absolutely right in what you're going to say. So, Scott, welcome to the show.
Okay, Jordan. Thanks for my call. Yeah, I'll get it in, try and get real quick here. You know, all I'm hearing about from the liberal media, the twisted fake news liberal media, is that there's a constitutional crisis now with this Trump withholding the tax returns.
Yeah, right.
Which I don't believe is true, because they're always creating a crisis so they can get power. And I don't think they're trustworthy.
No, it's in court. You know, it's in court. And ultimately, I mean, there's no indication that the district court says something. It's going to get appealed to the Court of Appeals, could get appealed to the Supreme Court. There's no indication the president's not going to abide by the court's decision on that. That's not a constitutional crisis. It's just a legal battle. Go ahead, Scott. Oh, Scott dropped. That's too bad because he hung on a long time. If he calls back in, we can try to get him on in the last few minutes of the show because he did hold on a long time. Let's go to Ty in Washington, D.C. on line two. Ty, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Ty.
I just want to say that you guys are not, I don't think, evaluating Comey correctly and his acting in this. He wanted Trump to win. He was not for Hillary Clinton at all. And he tried to keep his job under the under Trump's administration until it seemed as though he was going to lose his job.
Well, so I think what happened to Jim Comey, Ty, was he was way over his head. And I think what he did to Hillary Clinton was horrible. I don't know if you've heard us say that before on the air, but we have said that. So I'm not sure he was a fan of Donald Trump. Like, he wanted Trump to win. But at that point, like you said, I do think he wanted to keep his job and realized probably quickly that he wasn't going to be able to do that with Hillary Clinton the way he botched that, coming out and saying there wasn't anything and then coming out and saying there was right before the election and coming out again saying there wasn't. So I don't disagree with you. I think maybe you haven't heard us say that before on the air. We've been very tough on Jim Comey on how he handled Hillary Clinton's in that matter and the impact he could have had on the election. I mean, it's wrong. Absolutely wrong. But we know that he had an animus towards the current president as well. I think he can dislike both. Though he thought he may have been able to keep his job under the Trump administration because he was nominally a Republican, I think, listen, Jim Comey, the bottom line is he was way over his head, and he was allowing these very political actors below him to call the shots because, as he said, he was too weak and not strong enough to stand up to individuals like that. That's using Jim Comey's own words. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Maureen in Indiana on line four. Maureen, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Hi, you're on the air.
So I have been listening to your show today, and one of the things that struck me is that, I mean, I'm not an attorney, so, you know, pardon my assumptions, but I think the majority of our system is set up on the premise of checks and balances.
Yeah.
And by only having one side represented in the FISA court opens up the system for the possibility of corruption, which seems to me has happened when, to me, it looks like the swamp, essentially, tried to attack the Trump administration and take him out. If they couldn't take him out by the election,
yeah,
they
right.
were going to do it another way.
Well, listen, I think there has to be some process like FISA for our national security, and that the right people can handle that process so that you can go after terrorists and surveil foreign actors. But using it to go after Americans, turning Americans into foreign agents for political purposes, that could be the downfall of FISA as we know it. And I think, as we've explained today here, I know we don't have a lot of time, the checks and balances weren't followed here. You're supposed to put forward any exculpatory information. They didn't do that. It doesn't not appear that they did that. Like, they didn't even make it clear that this person, like Steele, was working for the Clinton campaign, though he told them he was, or his political animus, or the fact that this was unverified information.
I think that's precisely correct. But I also think that the FISA process probably could use a touch of reform.
Yes.
To ensure that the checks and balances were indeed complied with. And therefore, Alan Dershowitz's idea may have some merit.
Yeah, I think ultimately, whoever goes to jail, whoever gets prosecuted, one thing that will come out of this is, what must come out of this is a redo of the FISA system. It needs reform. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.